going to do in Parshas Bo is we're going to explain what happened with the Arba. Now, I quoted on the sheets in front of you, Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud, Beis. The Pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Netiyah kol haaretz Mitzrayim bo Arba." Hashem said to Moshe, "Stretch out your hand in the land of Mitzrayim in order to bring the Arba, in order to bring the locusts." "Vayal al haaretz Mitzrayim," and they came upon the land of Egypt. "Vayokal es kol yisav haaretz," and they ate all the herbs of the field. It's called Ashir Hishir Avarad, and everything that was left over by the hail. That's what the locusts went ahead and ate. Right? So we all got that? That's all good. That's in Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Beis. The problem is, where did Moshe Rabbeinu get that from? In the beginning of the parsha says, "Vayam Hashem Moshe bo al paro, kini achbad zi eslibo zlei bo vedel, v'man shisio sasayi le bekirbo, v'lamat saper bo zmei bin kol, v'n bin chay sashir yisav al zim Mitzrayim v'sasayi shir sam tibom, v'idat hem kini Hashem." You'll know that I'm Hashem. That's it. That was the wording that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Just tell them that I'm going to give signs. And then Moshe and Aaron came up to Paro and said, "How long are you going to hold this back? Send out my people, and if you don't, I'll bring Arba Bigvulecha. I'm going to bring the locusts into your borders." Later on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Yeah, go send them the Arba." But in actuality, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never told them what Makkah was up next. Every other Makkah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Here's what you're going to do. Here's Dam. Here's Svadeh. Here's Kinnim." He told them about every single Makkah. Even the ones that were not warned to Paro, meaning Kinnim, or Shchin, or Choshech, still HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, "Here's what I want you to do." By Arba, it's not that way. By Arba, it seems that Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, just got up and said it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like, "Great idea. I'm into the locust thing. Go ahead and give the locust." What's Pshat? Why is it that's that? That's one question. Second question, which seems to sort of answer the first question, is every other Makkah is different from this Makkah. Every other Makkah seemed to be something which is crazy supernatural and something that was just nuts. That's what it seems over here. This Makkah is a natural occurrence. Locusts coming and eating up the crops is something natural. I mean, it's not normal for frogs to inundate an entire city, for wild animals to come as much as they could. Maybe in a certain way, for a plague to go through, those things can be natural, that's true. But for it to be as extreme as it was not. Locusts, that's a regular Makkah. That's how locusts are. So it seems to be different than the other Makkos in a certain way. So what's Pshat? So the Moshe Zakin and the Panach Raz, we're dealing with the Balei Tosos here. They both say that they first say that Moshe Rabbeinu used the Gezeira Shava from Yoel. And then they reject that because they say Yoel wasn't written yet. There's no way Moshe Rabbeinu could have understood something from Yoel, because how could that possibly be? Yoel, by the way, as a side note, Yoel was a Navi who prophesied about a locust swarm. And we'll get to that a little bit later, but Yoel prophesied about a crazy locust swarm that happened in Eretz Yisrael. So they both said they'd learned out from over there. Then they say maybe it was hinted to by the word Ososai, my signs, and somehow that refers to Arba, but he doesn't explain himself. Either way, the Bechor Shor, one of the Balei Tosfos says, "I don't find this to be a problem." It's not a problem that he wasn't told it beforehand, that Moshe Rabbeinu knew about Arba. Somehow God told it to him. We have this in other places. There's just, we don't go through every conversation. It's weird, says the Bechor Shor, but it's not a problem. That's the first answer we're going to go through. That it's not an issue. It's not an issue whatsoever. Somehow God told it to him, that's that. The Gur Aryeh says that he, Moshe Rabbeinu, looked over at the stalks and realized that although the barley and certain spelt was destroyed in Mitzrayim, the wheat kernels had not yet been destroyed. The wheat stalks that were standing out there were still standing. And when he saw that the wheat stalk was standing, he said, well, weather has already destroyed part of this. It's got to be there's another Makkah, and the other Makkah that kills down stalks are insects. It must be an insect Makkah. It must be a locust swarm. In other words, he figured it out. He got it on his own. He understood that this is what's going to happen over here. So again, this is Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, figuring out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted without HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually telling him what it was, and he was right. That's the second answer to try to figure out Arba over here. The first one is the Moshe Zakenin and the Panach Raza and the Bechor Shor, that it doesn't really matter. That all of these things, the fact that he wasn't told, HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow told it to him, the Pasuk doesn't mention it.
Why doesn't the Pasuk mention it?
Not needed. Sometimes that'll happen. No, but sometimes that'll happen. In other words, their answer is, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't tell it to them, right? And that's that.
So could it be that the reason is not because really this is the only Makkah connected to the previous one. Barat started it.
Correct.
Arba finishes, so it's kind of like...
Correct.
Oh wait, we want to finish this out?
So it's sort of like, yeah, that's the idea. That's really the idea that Gur Aryeh is saying. It was a finisher. It was a finisher to what was happening before. The Kli Yakar says from the Ramban later on, now I am going to preface this idea with a little bit of a caveat. I don't see how this mimer from the Rabbeinu Chananel has happened in recent times. But the Rabbeinu Chananel says this, the Ramban quotes the Rabbeinu Chananel, and it's quoted by many other Rishonim and Achronim, even though it's hard for us to understand. But here's the line from the Ramban. The Ramban quoting the Rabbeinu Chananel says that Moshe's tefillah, at the end of Arbet, Moshe's tefillah, when he davens at the end of the locust, is the word Vayetar. And he davened. Now, a tar is like a pitchfork. It overturns the hay completely. And the Gemara in Yevamot Samach Dalet says that Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah regarding these locusts, that he overturned them completely, that they were in Mitzrayim and then they were gone. And according to Rabbeinu Chananel, quoted by the Ramban, not only were they gone now, locusts will never damage Eretz Yisrael ever again. Eretz Mitzrayim ever again. That it happened that one time and they will never come back. The line that Rabbeinu Chananel says is that there will never be a swarm in Mitzrayim, and the Ramban explains, the Rabbeinu Bachaya says it as well, even if you see a swarm, they're not going to destroy the land of Egypt. Now, there are swarms of locusts that have gone through Egypt. I cannot find that there was actual damage that was done in Egypt itself. Now, I will tell you, it is a rarity to find a land like Egypt, and I'll tell you why. Egypt is entirely desert, except for the Nile Delta, which is a very lush greenscape that goes all the way around. Locusts do not enjoy eating moist plants or anything like that. They don't like the greens. They like eating dry stalks. They eat the wheat. They'll eat the kernels of grain from barley. They'll eat the straw. They don't enjoy eating lush fruits. There aren't any real grain fields throughout the land of Egypt. So it somewhat makes sense that there would be no locusts in Egypt. Nonetheless, there have been locust swarms in Egypt, but they haven't destroyed. But I don't know what it means. The Rabbeinu Chananel, the Ramban say it's not at all. Says the Kliyukr, this is what we're referring to over here. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, I want there to be something that people will talk about for generations to come, where everybody's going to look at it and say, they can't believe it. They can't believe it. It's never happened ever again. Only to tell it over. And therefore, that was a remez that there was going to be locusts, something which was so crazy. Says the Kliyukr, that was the point. It's going to be that the locusts will never come back here ever again. That was the sign of what was supposed to be.
It sounds like itself, so I don't understand a bit of time.
That could be in other places, but the line is Lo Nishar Arba Echad B'chol Gvul Mitzrayim. That was where they darshaned it from. That not a single Arba ever lasted there. B'chol Gvul Mitzrayim says Rabbi Nochananel ever again. That was the line. That's not there. That's going to be all the way up above. Achrav Luyia Cain is another good drush. After it will never be again. That's the line that they. That's another line from the Rabbeinu Chananel. But either way, regardless, that's what the Rabbeinu Chananel says. That's how the Kliyukr applies. The Gra, you know, we've all gone to the Pesach Seder, and every single one of us has taken our wine, and we sat there and we said Dam Tzvardeya Kinim, and then afterward, everybody knows what happens, right? Rabbi Yehuda, you know, Simdam Simanim, and Rabbi Yehuda wrote to Medabim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eloi, the Tana who's the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, gets up there and says, "Oh, I got a pshat. You ready for my pshat? Take the first letters. Ditzach, Adash, Be'achav." As if that's a great kunz. As if all of a sudden Rabbi Yehuda was able to figure out something that nobody else understood. What in the world is the pshat behind Rabbi Yehuda? What in the world is the pshat behind Ditzach, Adash, Be'achav? What does that mean? What in the world does it mean that he's getting up there and saying, "I've got Ditzach, Adash, Be'achav"? You know what the machlokis is, says the Gra. The machlokis between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan is what was written on the staff of Moshe Rabbeinu. Did the staff have the words Dam Tzvardeya Kinim Aro Dever, or did it have the words Ditzach Adash Be'achav? Says the Gra, that's what was written on there. If we hold like the Rabbanan that the word Arbe was on the staff, then he knew what was coming. He just said Barad, they had just gotten Barad, he was up to the next pocket and said Arbe. So he was able to figure it out from the staff itself, not from HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him anything. Hashem never needed to tell him what was next. Every single time he was able to look at the staff and see it on the staff itself. According to that Gra, then we have an answer that's easy enough. The Maril Diskin says something crazy. Every time the Makkah was about to happen, the staff lit up. And that Makkah would light up, sort of like the Urim Mitumim. Those letters would light up. And in fact, says the Maral Diskin, in this case, he showed the staff, and he showed it out there so that the Arba, the word Arba, was emblazoned in the front. And sort of like the bat symbol, and I know I'm dating myself in this, I don't know when the last Batman movie is, but like the bat symbol going up in the sky and showing everybody out there, so too our bet, emblazoned in the sky, so to speak, it's shown in front of everybody, that everybody saw that word our bet, I guess in Hebrew, and the locusts were called by that word, says the Maral Diskin, and that's when it happened. The Maral Diskin says it makes sense. Every single time Moshe Rabbeinu did something up until now, it happened right afterward. Done. He took the staff, hit the river, and what happened? It immediately turned to blood. He took the staff, hit the river, the frog immediately came out. He took the staff, or took the dirt, hit the dirt, automatically it became Kenim. By Arbe, it didn't happen immediately. By Arbe, he lifts up the staff and calls the Arbe, and a day later, the Arbe comes. The wind blew throughout the night, and then the next day, there was locusts. So unlike every other Makkah, where everything happened immediately, this Makkah didn't happen immediately. Says Maral Diskin, they needed to show that the locusts coming were from Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu had that line, that sign of Arbe that went off into the sky, that he was calling that they were coming. Jake, what were you going
to
say?
To, wild beast,
I'm sorry?
I would think Arbe would be similar to wild beasts.
The Arov, no, the Arov were there immediately. They surrounded immediately, says the line, and they went in one place and out the other. It's a good call, though, but according to Maral Diskin, that's what happened over here. The Chassam Sofer, okay, I have, for this, I really should have had a board, and I'll be honest with you, it's going to be a hard one to begin with. The Chassam Sofer explains that a Kodesh Baruch Hu did hint it to Moshe Rabbeinu, but you got to pay attention for this one, because this is a really hard one, okay? Bo El Paro says the Chassam Sofer, based on the Netzutzei Shemshon. Remember the Netzutzei Shemshon? Reshim Shem Astropolia, the greatest person who has ever lived in the history of mankind, except for maybe Moshe Rabbeinu. It's fine. Let's go with Moshe Rabbeinu. But Netzutzei Shemshon is like right there. He's unbelievable. Netzutzei Shemshon says, the letters Ach Heya, Aleph, Ches, Hey, and Ayin are all interchangeable with one another. They all come from the throat. The letters Beis, Vav, Mem, Pei, they all come from the lips. Those are also interchangeable with another. Then there's Gichak, there's also Daltanat, right? And there's also Zashat Rat. All those letters interchangeable with another. So when he says like this. If you take the word Paro, you take out the Pei, you take out the Ayin. You make the Pei into, ready? Into a Beis. Because Beis, Vav, Mem, Pei. Take the Pei, turn it into a Beis. You take, now look in the word, okay, Paro, take the Ayin, turn it into an Aleph. Okay, because Aleph and Ayin are interchangeable. The word Paro turns into Arbe. And he says, Bo El Paro, Beis Aleph, should be put into the word Paro. If you take that Beis Aleph, you should put into Paro, then everything works out well. That's an interesting assumption. Says the Chassam Sofer, what's he talking about? What's he talking about? How does that work? Meaning all of a sudden you can just throw letters into one another? That's a cute little word, but what is he talking about? He says, a person's name is his purpose in life. Everybody's name, whatever your name is, it stands for something. Tzvi stands for Tzadik Be'emunasa Yechyeh, so I'm good. But other people, right, who might not have the name Tzvi, may have a little bit of an issue. You got to figure out what your name is. See, we're together on this one, right? That's good. Great Talmidei Chachamim have the ability to be mitzari osios, putting letters together. Put letters together to come out with something that's totally different. You can change people's essences, change people's jobs, everything can change by having that, by connecting letters. The great Mikubalim have the ability to see these letters in front of them, to hear a name, they're mitzari osios, and they create words. Essences, the job of that person, the tachlis, the purpose of that person is right there in front of them. Bitzalel knew how to do this. Bitzalel, Mitzarek Osios, was able to create the Mishkan, the Kiddush of the Mishkan, by again putting these letters together. Many of the Tanaim and Amoraim were able to do this. They were able to cause Chiyas HaMesim. They were able to kill people by changing around the letters of their name. That's how great those people were. Until this eighth Matzah, Paro was given a certain amount of Rachamim. That Rachamim was given to him because Yaakov Avinu gave him a bracha. Yaakov Avinu was the Again, what was the midah of Yaakov Avinu? Tiferes, Rachamim, MS, right? He got Rachamim to be able to give, even in the midah that didn't, even when things go badly, there's still going to be chesed, there's going to be Rachamim that happened to him. So there was Rachamim given to him. When that schus ran out, here we go, ready? Paro, his name Paro stands for being paid back. He needs to be punished for what he had done to the Jews. Paro is the gematria of 355. In a normal Hebrew year, there are 354 or 355 years. It depends if Cheshvan is a full month or a 29-day month. So let's say 355 is Paro, is the amount of years, the amount of days in a year that he needs to be punished. We all know that the Makos took place during the 12 months. So there we go, that's Paro. He lost the schus of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu lived to 147. 355 minus 147 is 208. 208 is the gematria of Yitzchak, which is Midas Din. When you lose the Rachamim of Yaakov, you come into Midas Adin. 208 is also the gematria of Arba, the Makkah of Arba that came into play. So if you take away the Rachamim from Paro, and that's really what this Parsha is, the first seven Makkos in Parsha Va'era are seven Makkos with Rachamim involved with them. These three Makkos, Arba, which destroyed all the food, Choshech, which inundated all the Egyptians, Makkos Bechoros, which killed many, many people, all these three Makkos are totally different Makkos than the first seven. There's those seven, and then there's these three. These three are destructive. They're totally destructive. So therefore, without the Yaakov, you're left with 208. You're left with that Arba. That's what comes about. And therefore, take the bow, put it into Paro, and then look at the end of the pasuk. Leman shisi oso sai ele, so that I can put my signs in him. Leman shtei osios ele, my two letters of Beis and Aleph, bikir bo, they should be put within Paro. Says in it to the Shemshon and the Chassam Sofer. That's how he knew there was Arba. He was able to darshan out from that itself. What were you going to say, Dave?
So how do we connect the Midas Din with Arba and his doctrine?
Totally destructive. That's the pshat.
Is the Arba totally destructive?
Totally destructive.
All the other...
Exactly. All the other ones. There was something left over. Even Dever, 10% of the Egyptian animals, according to Sefer Yashar, survived. By every other Makkah, there was no death. There was no official death. I'm sorry? All the animals. Sefer Yashar says 90%. Yeah, I don't know what the wording is of the pasuk exactly. I'd have to look it up exactly. Oh, next year. Don't worry. Next year, we're speaking about Arov. Because that's our order, right? Where's the wording at the very, very end? Vatarti says... It says, no, Loni Sharakot is something different. Okay, we'd have to look at it later. But yeah, but the Sefer Yashar says, wasn't total destruction. We know that because the horses of Mitzrayim, when they left Mitzrayim, right? They had horses. They had sheep and goats, obviously, to the Korban Pesach. They must have had something. Yeah, five animals. Five animals were affected by it. That's Hoyab and Mikneh. Right, either way, the Mashiach, I'm not going to go through right now. Just know, locusts have no king. I didn't know that. I had no idea the locusts have no king. I don't even know what that means. But the Mashiach says they don't have any kings, right? It says it's based on a pasuk in Mishlei Perek Lamed pasuk of Zayin that says Lech Ein La Arba, Melech Ein La Arba, VaYotze Chotzeitz Kulo. There is no king among the Arba. As a side note, by the way, there are those translations that say that refers to ants. The ants have a queen, but they have no king. That there's no such thing as a king when it comes to Arba. But regardless, there's stuff like that.
Tell me that Arba have no king. I would kind of tell me they do have a king.
This is part of the problem that every animal, every something has something that's in charge, especially swarms, usually of a king, something that's in charge of them, that's something that tells them what to do, an alpha male, right? Something that tells them that. Locusts don't, according to this. So why locusts were brought, says Meshulach, is Mida Kenei Mida. Pyro rules over the nation, so therefore they took something that didn't have any kings. That's something entirely, I'm not going to go into it. But I will say the following, Rebunim Mipshischa. Says a one-liner, it's quoted by the Chiddush HaRim. Chiddush HaRim says, Rebunim Mipshischa, this Maka was Moshe Rabbeinu's Chiddush. It was his Chiddush. He got to make up one Maka. He chose Arba. The kasha is why, and I leave that to you. So now, there are a couple aspects of Mida Kenegan Mida over here. I'm not going to go into them. The Chido brings it down, the Medjitan Chum and the Mashiach as well. But regardless, let's go into the punishments themselves. The Mi'amalei says these locusts came and ate everything in the fields, even the grasses, the pieces of wood that had been left out there, which does make sense, by the way. Locusts do eat wood, pieces of wood, if they're not wet, if there's no wetness inside, no moisture. It all happened so suddenly, the Egyptians couldn't run out there and save anything at all. Even after that had happened, they didn't leave. They wouldn't eat anything that belonged to a Jew, even if there were huge stalks of Jews that were right next to the Egyptian stalks, nonetheless, they would not eat anything that belonged to Jews whatsoever. Not only that, they even entered inside the Egyptians' houses, and they started to eat the food that had already been prepared, like dough. This had never happened before and has never happened since. Locusts don't eat prepared food. They don't eat anything like that. Again, anything with liquid, they don't eat. Medrash Lakatov says they came in like a massive army ready to do Hashem's bidding. There's an unbelievable Medrash Sechel Tov over here that goes through. This army doesn't make any sense. The army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu lies dormant in the ground without moving, without needing anything, without eating for years and years and years. And when Hashem wants that army to come out, He pulls them out of the ground. They immediately go, they consume everything, and then they're gone again. Anybody knows from America, I mean, we don't have locust swarms. You can't even buy locusts. You know, I tried buying a locust for this year so I could hang it from right here so that everybody could see a locust that was through. You cannot buy. It's illegal to buy locusts in America because obviously they don't want swarms of locusts here. In Europe, they don't care. They sell them in in England. I tried buying from London. I tried getting it shipped over. London refused. They can't. It's illegal to ship to America any locust. I'm sorry?
Dead one? Cicadas related to locusts?
So I tried getting dead ones. You cannot buy dead locusts, or at least I couldn't. Maybe somebody who's better at Google than I am could, but I couldn't buy a dead one either. Cicadas are very similar in this way. Locusts have the ability, they lie dormant in the ground for years, and then all of a sudden they come out. And if you're in America, at least you have cicadas to learn that from. All of a sudden you're just like, what in the world is going on here? It's just that noise and everything going crazy, and you can't figure out what it was. And every however many years, 16, 17, whatever it is years that cicadas take to be able to come back, we see this happening. This is the army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the line is from the Medrash Lakach Tov and the Seichel Tov. They say over here that it's the pshat that they don't need any food. All of a sudden they just come out and destroy. They just destroy everything without needing anything at all. So the Kli Yakar explains the voracious appetite of these locusts, the reason why they were so hungry and they kept eating and eating and eating. A blind man does not find satiation from his food. That's a famous Medrash Chazal, although I don't know, I can't verify it. But a blind man cannot get benefit from his food, and he'll keep eating until the food is gone from in front of him. That's how the Kli Yakar says it. He's quoting a Medrash. In that sense, if the locust covered up the sky and made it dark, the locusts on the ground couldn't see anything, so they kept eating. They had such crazy appetites because they couldn't stop themselves because the locusts were eating and eating and eating, and there was so much darkness they couldn't get around it. That's how the Kli Yakar understands it. He also points out that it's weird. This makkah started off in Paro's chamber. The locust came from outside, went into the house of Paro, then the house of his avodim, then the houses of all the Egyptians. Instead of the locusts going from the outside in, they started from the inside out and went out to everywhere else, which is a crazy idea. In Pasuk Yudalit, the word Vayonach is used. The locusts came down. The Pasuk Shah behind that is that they landed, right, on Shabbos. But if you look at the Baal HaTurim, he learns that there's three times the word Vayonach appears. Vayonach also appears by Shabbos. He learns, seemingly, that they stopped on Shabbos. Meaning, some people learn that it means they came down on Shabbos. The first time the locusts came on Shabbos, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu called them on Friday, they came on Shabbos itself. Others say they mamish rested on Shabbos. That the locusts did not eat anything on the day of Shabbos, according to this Baal HaTurim. The time of Yaakov, I don't know who this is, I have it quoted from the year 1999. So you gotta help me with that one. Time of Yaakov said, you know, honestly, it might be from the Medrash says, because I did learn the Medrash says in 1999, so it's possible it's from there. But the time of Yaakov says, it was a reward for giving them Shabbos off all those years in Mitzrayim. They had Shabbos off, they didn't work on Shabbos. Paro let them have that day off, according to the Medrash. Mida Kenegan. The Arbet did not work on Shabbos. But then the kasha is, but why specifically this makkah? Why Arbet? All the makkahs shouldn't have worked on Shabbos. It should be every makkah didn't work on Shabbos. Why specifically that? I want you to look at the Sefer Igra Dekala. If you understand it, I will give you $5. I have no idea what he said. He explains it, but I have no clue what he said. You might need to be a makkubel. You might just have to be smarter than me. I have no idea why. The Shach says there were so many locusts here, they started to land on top of one another. There was no space for them to land on the ground, and that's by Yonah. They used their own kind as landing gear. They landed on each other over there. The Mamloi said there were so many. When they flew through the sky, everything went dark, and it was impossible to tell if it was day or night. They blotted out the sun and the moon completely and made the colors on the ground look strange because the swarms kept changing, making the land look a little trippy, according to the Ralbag. They couldn't understand what was going on. Everything was so strange, everything looked weird. But others say it was black as night for 7 days straight. It was a predecessor to Choshech, right before Choshech happened. Then it says, brings down this as well, says they covered up all the beautiful buildings like the pyramids and the Sphinx and all the beautiful things that the Egyptians had made. It covered up and everything looked dark and ominous. The Al Guruvani says there were so many swarms of so many different types of locusts. He brings down 500 different types of locusts. There are many different species of locusts, but there are not 500 that we know of. But maybe there are others that we don't know, that the Khartoumim had no ability to do anything like this. They could bring a species of locust, the Khartoumim. To bring locusts in, they could do that. But to do this, they couldn't do like this. And that's the answer that everybody asks. Well, why couldn't the Khartoumim do this really easily? Why couldn't they call in Arba? Right? They couldn't do Kenim because they were too small. Couldn't do Kenim because they didn't exist. These Arba, why wouldn't they able to do? Because they could do an Arba, but they couldn't do all the different species, all of those that have come in. The Rabbeinu Bachaya says there are seven types. That's why it says the word Arba seven times in these psukim. They are Arba, Solom, Chargo, Chogav, Gazam, Yelek and Chasil. I don't know what happened to Chanamal and Slotzal. I'm sorry?
Those are kosher ones?
The four of them are. The four that are mentioned in Parshas Shmini. But the Chassam Sofer says Chanamal is a reference to Barad. I don't know. Whatever. Regardless, there are seven or eight I saw. I think I have nine. I don't know how many there are. But at least, and according to that, it's 500. Now comes the Torah Shleima. Torah Shleima was written by Rav Nachum Kasher. It's one of my favorite Sfarim in the world, because if you ever want to find anything, it's in the Torah Shleima. The only problem is, where are you going to find it? You just got to find it. Torah Shleima says these locusts were enormous. They had teeth and claws. Okay, locusts don't have teeth. Locusts don't have claws. I mean, not the ones that I've ever seen. Maybe your freaky locusts might have something. But they had teeth and claws. Their horns were used to knock things over. Their wings were as powerful as eagles' wings. They had bodies like fish. I don't know what this means. Maybe it means their scales. Necks like horses and tails like snakes. They had poison that killed the Egyptians that they landed on. And their exoskeleton was like armor. And they had a big chet emblazoned on their chest that showed that they were the chel, the army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is because those insects lie down, whatever, as we said before, and they swarm over, etc. They were so powerful that they knocked over trees and destroyed the roots underneath the ground. When they entered the Egyptian houses, they ate everything, even leftover hidden food, clothing, and jewelry. That's from that medrash over there. Clearly there's a message over here.
Signs for one of the species of Arda?
Oh, that's a possibility for the Arbet, because that's the famous story of Rechayim Kanievsky.
No, that's pictures of like the bottom belly of like a child.
That's a cool line. Rechayim Kanievsky is a famous story. The famous story of Rechayim Kanievsky, and he tells, I think it's in the introduction. I don't remember where it is, but he has a whole sefer called Karnei HaGavim. It's all about locusts. Okay, and it's not like the stuff that you'd expect. Like if I wrote a book about locusts, like, there are seven types of locusts. Like that's what I do, right? He wrote a sefer all about the just on Karnei HaGavim. Just it's mamish crazy. Just on the kashrus and the other issues that are involved with locusts. It's crazy. Rechayim Kanievsky, what he can do. So Rechayim Kanievsky supposedly had a shaila on one of the locusts. He wasn't sure exactly what it was. And he had this shaila and he couldn't figure it out. And he writes that that locust, that species of locust, landed on his sefer while he was learning it. He picked it up, saw the simanim that he needed to see, and then sent it back out. That he was able to do. Which is absolutely, and happens to me all the time, right? That's like a regular Tuesday. I wanted a locust, and I called it, and I didn't even win the Powerball. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't get that. But of course, that's what happened. Rechayim Kanievsky has that story. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. But that's the idea behind it. Now, Paro describes these locusts as mavet, as death. What was the death inherent in these locusts? Why was it considered death more than any other mak? Obviously, makas b'choros would also be. The Baal HaTorim says that along with the locusts came poisonous snakes. That while the locusts were working, there were snakes that were going around killing many of the Egyptians as well. And that said that when the locusts left, the snakes left as well. These snakes were around by the frogs, by Tsardeh as well. There were poisonous snakes that were going through the land killing people. But then the kasha is, the obvious one, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein asked this in Elul Shabbat. So why don't we know about these snakes? Why aren't they written in the Pasuk? Why wouldn't you say that it's a mock of snakes? Why wouldn't Paro have said, get rid of the snakes as well as the Arba? Why not say that? He answers that this is the way a human king would work. How does a human king work? When a king sends out a tax collector, he doesn't send out just a tax collector. You send out a tax collector, the tax collector is going to be dead after 5 days, his body is going to be floating in a river. You send out a tax collector with guards. The guards surround the tax collector, so if anybody is stupid enough to kill the tax collector, they'll be killed. That's what the king does, and he puts them around. The Arba that was there, the Mitzrayim were like, we can fight Arba, and they stood out there with bats and all these things, ready to destroy all the Arba that they possibly could. And then came the poisonous snakes. Every time somebody stood out there ready to crush and destroy the different locusts that were out there, the poisonous snakes came and bit them and killed them so that nobody wanted to stand outside, and the locusts kept swarming and kept coming back over and over and over again.
Security guards.
The snakes were the security guards. And that's why they knew there were only security guards. Once the people went back in, the snakes didn't bother them. Ellie, what do you got? Yeah. Yeah, according to the Pshat and the Torah Shleima, that Medrash, then obviously these locusts did not need any bodyguards. These locusts were the strongest things you've ever seen before in your life, or that you've never seen before in your life. There's no question about that. You wouldn't have to worry about that. But nonetheless, that's the idea behind it. I'm sorry?
What are the natural reasons? If they ate the jewelry and the clothing, what are the natural reasons?
Ooh. I don't know.
It meant to be all of it.
Yeah, you have to say that it wasn't all of it.
It's just a solid gold bar.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He's already right. They were hidden, but...
They took
to gold coins. No, but it says smalos. Definitely, it's a clothing. Yeah.
And they already bought the water drink some.
Yeah.
With their jewelry and whatever.
No, only some of the money. They didn't spend that much, though.
So.
I don't know. This is I like the question. The easy answer is machlokas midrashim, but is there a way to stem both midrashim together? That's the kasha. And the easy answer to that is, yeah, they didn't eat all of it. Let's say maybe there's something that I missed in that medrash. I have to look back at the medrash.
Why do swarms of locusts need bodyguards? Have you ever seen like pictures?
No, you don't. Seriously, you admit it. They come in billions. Hey, forget about pictures. I remember when I was in Eretz Yisrael, I forgot what year it was. I was still learning. I was still a Bahrain base. I don't remember what it was, but I remember there was a locust swarm in Jordan, and Neve Yaakov overlooks Jordan. You can see Jordan from over there. It's right across, like all the way down. So I remember looking out, and it was yellow day. Like everything was yellow. The whole sky, everything was yellow, and everybody in Neve Yaakov, there were little locusts that were hitting us. It wasn't like a swarm. You could see over there, there were clouds of locusts that were over there. But by us, there were just like individual locusts that were coming through that were hitting us, right? And I picked it up and I said, oh, that's what I was looking for. But either way, that's what was happening to us in Neve Yaakov. That's what happened to us in Neve Yaakov. So I remember, I saw it, yes, 100%. But maybe they were stopping them from going to their houses. Maybe they were able to. But you're right, a swarm should not need bodyguards, but it's cooler if you have bodyguards. I hear that. So that's the mavis that was there. That's there. The Rabbeinu Bachaya points out from here that people must have died during this makkah. Rav Sadigon says the same, and then the Rabbeinu Bachaya says the locusts blinded them. Now I can actually hear that. Even without there being all the crazy miracles that we're talking about over here, I can hear the locusts blinded them. The locusts landed on their eyes and scratched their eyes. I can definitely hear that. I have no problem with saying something like that. Similar to the hornets that were destroying everything in the days of Yoshua. I have no problem with this whatsoever. I can understand this in a certain way. Rav Sternbach learns it out from a double lashon over here. You can see that later. Pesach learns that once they came into their homes, they crawled over the Egyptians and injured them and blinded them. Medrash Haggadol takes it a step further, that they entered inside their bodies and killed them from the inside. He also says that they spat poison at them, and that was the mavis involved. The Maral Diskin says something a little bit different, and Rav Hirsch takes this as well. It wasn't about right now. When loads of swarms of locusts come in, and this happens to cicadas as well, it's not, listen, obviously there's an issue when the locusts come in. You don't want locusts. I agree with that, right? But the biggest problem is they're going to lay eggs. If they lay eggs, your land is destroyed forever. At some point later on, even if your economy recovers, these locusts are coming right back, and they're going to lay more eggs. What he was saying is, we've never had locusts before, and now that they've come, and now that they've destroyed our land, they're going to come again. That's what he's worried about. I'm worried that they're going to come a second time. I'm worried about the third time. She said, the mavis that's going to be in the future, you got to get rid of the eggs. That's what, according to the Maral Diskin, he was getting rid of. That's what happened when it says, lo yiyeh kain. That there won't be these locusts, even their kids, everything will be blown out. It's all going to be gone, and that's how the Maral Diskin says it. Rav Hirsch says it the same way as well. I think the most obvious shot is simply put, there was nothing left to eat. I didn't see that by the Rishonim. I didn't look everywhere, but I didn't see this. But I think it's the most obvious shot. Raksam Mavis says that we literally have nothing to eat. We have nothing left. The only one we have left are our gods, our goats and our sheep. That's it. We lost all of our grain, all of our storage. Everything else is gone. I think that's obvious. If we're such a robust economy to be able to go to other people and say this is what we have to do, I think that's the obvious shot. There's a Be'er HaTzair over here and a Malbim as well that also answers this. He says that they got malaria and stuff like that. Okay. I'm sorry? They were. During the makkah itself, you should know two things on that. Number one, there's a Gur-Aryeh that says that the locusts were purposely made really, really small. The ones that came in, he says are really small, so they couldn't enjoy those locusts. When the bigger locusts came later on, they took them and salted them, were ready to eat them. And then the Medrash says, when they were blown out, even the salted locusts were blown out together with it. So they had nothing left, even from the locusts themselves, similar to the wild animals and what happened by the wild animals. All right, a quick thing over here. We got two little things, but I'm not going to be able to do everything, so we're going to end in 4 minutes. So here we go. David Ezra quotes Rav Moshe HaKohen. Rav Moshe HaKohen says this, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says it as well, that when it says that he called it Bo'ar Beh, it means he took his staff, tied a locust to his staff, put it up in the air, and that's how he called the locust. That the locust, sort of put on the staff, was able to call to the other locust to come. So when it says that he did it Bo'ar Beh, that he was Nitei Yod Kal Eretz Mitzrayim Bo'ar Beh, stretch out your hand in the land of Mitzrayim, bo arbet means literally with an arbet that's on top of the self. The Or HaChaim Kadosh says also it could be that the words were engraved on it. As we said before, it was emblazoned on it. The Maral Diskin said it shone forth from it. Yalkut Reuveni says he called out to the angel of the locust. However, there are those that say the Tzapnas Paneach says he actually used magic, kishuf, to do it. A form of kishuf where he drew a picture of a locust on his staff and called out to the angel of that locust to call the call of the locust in over there. But Rabbi Yonatan actually says, Chas v'shalom. That cannot be. There's no way that could be. That he would have used magic to be able to call through it, or that he would have drawn the word locust on it, or that he would have put a locust on it itself. He seems that the idea is that obviously they couldn't duplicate it whatsoever, the other people out there. And he says, anyway, remember we said there's no king of the locusts? He says, Rabbi Yonatan actually, there's no malach of locusts either. I don't know what that means. Maybe there's a malach of ants. There's a malach of other things, and that locusts are underneath that category. But there's no official malach of locusts, says Rav Yonatan Eifshitz. So therefore, it's got to be something else entirely. And he says, like the Shach, that he called them in a weird way, because there's no way that locusts had ever stepped foot in Mitzrayim before. So he literally called them out loud and yelled out, Arba, and the Arba came flying to him. That's how they both put it. That's the idea behind it. I would assume it would be the same thing. I don't see there being any problem, except for maybe the Egyptians would think something different. You put the Nachash Nachoshes in front of the Jews will understand that's not Kishuf, but the Chartumim will. So why would you do that and cause them to say there's something different? Now the last question, which I give a bunch of answers to, and you can see them over here, I think altogether I have 9 or 10 answers, I don't remember altogether, but either way, there's never supposed to be a swarm of locusts like this ever again. By Yoel, it says there will never be a swarm of locusts like this ever again. So what does that mean? There's no swarm of locusts like it by now. There's no swarm of locusts by Yoel. What's the difference between the two swarms? Lots of answers, okay? Rashi gives an answer. The Ramban has a problem with it. The Chizkuni answers for Rashi. The Chasam Sofer answers for Rashi. The Tami Dekor answers for Rashi. I'll tell you like 6 things over here. Number one, remember we said that there were locusts that darkened out the sky and there were other locusts that were eating up the ground? It makes sense. There was only one type of locust that was on the ground eating all the food. That was Arba. Arba is a type of locust. All the other types of locusts, all the other species, spent all their time in the sky flying around, causing it to be dark. So they caused it to be dark for the Arba to consume everything on the ground. By Yoel, all the different types of locusts ate everything on the ground. By Mitzrayim, right, only Arba did. So there will never be a Makkah like Moshe Rabbeinu's ever again, where it will be dark in the sky from other species of locusts and only one species will be on the ground. But there will be another time by Yoel where tons of Arba will come in and destroy absolutely everything. That's going to happen again. There's a lot of different answers over here, and you can look it up over here. In fact, the Rabbeinu Ephraim even gives a gematria for it, which is all good times, and that said itself. The last answer I'm going to give is the Chasam Sofer. The idea behind, I don't know, through the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer says, okay, just for everybody here, you ever drive somewhere, right, and it's a long drive, and you feel it, and on the way back, it feels like it was quicker than it was on the way there? You know what I'm saying? Like, you drive there, right, and it took you 45 minutes, whatever, and it's 45 minutes on the way back, but it just seems to fly a little bit quicker, because you did it already. You did it the first time, and all of a sudden, it just gets a little bit quicker. It just seems like, it always seems like it's longer there than on the way back. Right? That's just the way it is. So the way he said it is like this. The whole world had never seen a swarm of locusts like this before. It was the first time that it ever happened. So it was impossible for them to believe it had ever happened. So the way they described it was, there can never be a locust swarm like this ever again. Not that there wasn't. That they couldn't understand it. And in that sense, there wasn't. There was never such a shocker of a locust swarm ever again. Because after that, locust swarms became commonplace. Since this was the first locust swarm, nobody had ever seen it before. Therefore, they said, there's never going to be anything that's so shocking that we'll ever see ever again. But in actuality, Yoel's Arba swarm, Yoel's Maka of Arba that happened in his time, was much worse. So the worst Maka of Arba was actually by Yoel. But by this time, it was just so crazy because no one had ever seen it. Nobody could ever imagine it. That was the craziness of it. It's an idea behind it. So let's go. What we said over here is the following. We started off when we said that Moshe Rabbeinu told Paro about this. He seems like he created it on his own, and, He didn't get it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We gave a bunch of answers to that question. We then said the onshin that happened with these locusts, how the locusts came in and destroyed everything. Then we described why it was considered death. How is there death through the locusts themselves? All those different answers. We had six altogether. We then said how he called the Arabic. Did he put it on? Did he not put it on? Did he call it out loud, etc.? And the last thing is the question of Yol, how this happened over here. And we have nine answers, but I only gave you two. All right, so either that, all of them, that's all we have for locusts today. So Choshech next year. We're going to go into darkness next year. That's a promise. We never...